Yeah, so we're holding Memo in Bay, the second line from the bottom. Okay, we started discussing, the Mishnah had said, that the mayor had said that all statues are also Bana because they worship them at least once a year. The Chachamim said, no, it depends on how the statue is made, only if it's made to be holding a stick or a bird or a bull, which show, as the Gemara is going to say, each of them shows that the people who worship it consider that it has some kind of dominion over the world or something, as we shall see. Otherwise not, because it's just made for decoration. And Rosh Hashanah said if it's holding anything. So we started discussing this.
All the statues hold something.
Are offered. Right, and according to the mayor, all of them, period. So, according to the Chacham, only if they're holding certain things, and according to the Shemin Amniel, if they're holding anything.
So if you have a Roman general holding a sword...
We're going to discuss. Relax. We'll get there. Okay.
We'll get to
okay,
it,
we will. We will, because the Gemara is going to discuss. Okay. So the first thing we dealt with was the question like this. If a mayor is saying that they worship all these statues, at least one, each statue has its one day a year that they worship it, then how are the Chachamim disagreeing with that? They're not disagreeing with the premise that these statues are worshipped. So why would they be saying they're Moser Bana? So we discussed like this. Your mayor holds in general that we're concerned about the mute, that we're concerned about the minority. So therefore what we have is like so what it is like this. So you have the two major ways that the Rishonim understand what the Gemara is saying. One way is that Amban and the Ritva and a number of other Rishonim understand it like this. You can break down places into three categories. You have places where we know for a fact that they worship all of them once a year, for example, the mayor's hometown. And then obviously there's no question all the statues there are also, even the Chachamim aren't going to disagree with that. Well, listen. We can distinguish between three types of places. You have places where we know for a fact that they worship all of them. We have places where we're not sure, maybe they do, maybe they don't. And we have places where we know for sure that they don't. We know for a fact that the statues there are only for decoration. That's logically, that's how you have those three places, right? So one way of looking at the machlokas of Rav Meir and the Chachamim is that Rav Meir will say as follows. The first area, there's no question, they're all off. So the Chachamim obviously will have to agree with that. Also, they're all worship, therefore they're all off. What about the second place, the second and third type of places? Well, it's only a minority of places where they, even the places where they worship all of them, category A, are only a minority of places. However, the mayor is going to say that because of that minority, we have a suffix on the second category of places, the places where we don't know whether they worship them or not. He's concerned about the miyot, therefore the suffix makes that miyot author. And then, on top of that, then we go and we're going there on the third group of places because they might too easily be confused with the second type of place.
So according to him,
all three of them end up being Osir, whereas the Chachamim will say only the first type are Osir. The second type, yeah, any place that we know they worship all of them, sure, they're all going to be Osir. But other than that, they're not concerned about the mute. So that's one way of understanding the machlokes. Meaning they say, if we know there's a place where they worship all of them, then of course all the statues in that place are offered. But we're not going to answer all the statues. We're not going to answer all the statues in your average place where we don't know for sure one way or the other what they do. We're not going to answer all of them because it might be part of the minority of places that are in category A. Rather, we're going to say the majority of places are in category B or even C. And therefore there's no reason to ask for them, they say.
And the question of Hanai is here is like selling it?
Selling it, for example. Yeah. So that's one way of looking at it. Then the Ram discusses another way of looking at it, that maybe the mayor is saying that maybe the mayor would agree that technically Minatora, you wouldn't say that category B, let alone category C, are also Minatora, but he would say there's a Xeda de Rabbanon on both of them. Because you have this miut that are in category A, therefore the Rabbanon would have made Xera on category B and C, the places where we don't know what they do and the places where we're for sure they don't worship all of them. Nevertheless, your mayor would include them all in this Xera, whereas the Chachamim are not concerned about that.
What about Tosfos?
Tosfos discusses other issues involving over here. When Rav Meir and Rav Shimon Gamliel say we are concerned about the miut, when not, but they don't specifically discuss this issue about the three categories. Right. Okay. Anyway, so that was part one. Okay. Omer of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So now this is where we're holding, the second line from the bottom. Omer of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Ban Dalki Shamalachim Shaniyu. This that we're talking about is in regards to statues of kings. Antarati means like an image of the king. So Rashi learns what it is when the king dies, they make a statue of him at the city gate as in memory of him. So therefore, Rashi learns, when we say, when Rav Meir is saying that all the statues are worshipped at least once a year, he's not talking about all statues in general. He means those types, the types that are in honor of dead kings. That those are the types that he's saying they would worship at least once a year. Tosfos learns actually the other way around, that just the opposite. Ban Dauti Shamalachim Shaninu means when are the Chachamim Makel, and saying that only the ones that are holding a stick or what have you, is when we're talking about statues of living kings. Sometimes the king would have a statue of him made while he's alive that the people would make for his covered. So that, when he's alive, in other words, they're not doing it necessarily in order to worship him. They're just doing it for his covered. So therefore, fine, if it's holding a stick or a bowl or what have you, then yes, then we have to be concerned that they're worshiping it. But if not, then they just did it to honor the king, not for Avodah Zarah. So according to Rashi, this undoubtedly Shamalachim is when Rav Meir would say it's Osir. And according to Tosfos, it's when the Chachamim would say it's Mutter. Yeah. And Omer Rav Babachana, Omer Rav Yechanan. Furthermore, Rama Baba Chana says in the name of Rav Yechanan, we're talking about when they're standing at the entrance of the city. So some of the Rishonim learn that these two things work together. That what we're saying, in other words, needs both. It needs to be a statue of a king, a dead king, according to Rashi, and it needs to be standing at the entrance of the city. Only then will Rav Meir say those are the kind that are worshipped once a year, where if it's only one or not, but not the other, then maybe not. Or some of the Rishonim learn that it's either or. That it's Ban Dauti Shamalachim or any kind of statue that is by the entrance of the city.
How is that consistent with the word Kol Aslanim?
Kol Aslanim, all images, but they still have to be a certain. They still have to be a certain type of image. What is Rav Meir is actually saying? If Neshen Nevodin Pamachas Vashana, because they're worshipped at least once a year. So if they're in a place or the type where we know that they're there only decoratively, then Rav Meir is still not going to be saying that. The fact is, they don't worship them.
So what difference does this make if they're at the gate of the city or
inside? If they're in the gate of the city, that's the kind of thing they consider it important. If they just have it at random someplace in the city, they may just put it there for decoration. But if they put it by the gate, then it obviously means they put it there in order to worship it.
It's a presumption, basically.
Well, it's more than a presumption. I mean, that's the way they did things. I can tell you, for example, there's a Medrash that tells a story somewhat in this vein. There's an old goy who became a ger. One time he has to travel back to his hometown, and he's concerned. They may recognize that they're going to realize that he's once a goy, and now he's converted, and they who knows what they might do to him. And sure enough, he comes to the city, and he finds they have it right there by the city gate, and this was a very common thing. They had a statue over there with an altar next to it, and the idea was anybody who comes into the city, the expectation is that they're going to go and bring a sacrifice on this altar in honor of the god of the city or whatever to thank him for coming safely. So poor guy, what is he supposed to do? He was so nervous that he fell off his donkey. He was so nervous, he got down off his donkey, figuring he has to figure out how he's going to sneak his way into the city. Meanwhile, his donkey starts walking on without him. People see from a distance. They didn't realize exactly what happened. They thought he fell off. Poor guy. That's this old guy. He fell off his donkey. Brilliant. Go catch his donkey. Go help him back up, et cetera. And they get him in, and nobody thinks to ask him to sacrifice by this thing. Yeah. So he had b'tochen and Hashem. That Hashem is going to find him. He's going to find a way. And Hashem, sure enough, helped him. The point being, though, that we see it was a very common thing that by the entrance of the city specifically is where they would have the geshkes that they would worship because people would be thanking it that they came safely to the city. L'habdil and Ar-Halachas. We have in the Sefer Brachos, the Gemara describes as a bracha that you're supposed to say when you enter a city safely, when you leave it safely, because a city is not necessarily a safe place. And the roads are not safe places. But yeah.
No.
Right. Okay. So you have Rishonim who learn that it means both, that the Gemara is that Rabbi Yehuda and Omar Shmuel and Rabbi Baba Chana and Rabbi Yechanan are not arguing. Each one is saying a different detail. So the Rosh understand it that way. The Rambam understand, on the other hand, understands that they're arguing. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is saying it applies only to statues of kings. Rabbi Baba Chana Amar Yechanan is saying no, never mind kings. It only applies. It applies if they're standing by the entrance of the city, whether they're a king, whoever they are. Yeah, and that's how the Rambam passes it, right?
The
halacha on that in Shulchan Aruch, I don't remember if it's like the Rambam actually, But the Shach points out that with these things, again, also what the Chachamim are mentioning about what exactly the statue is holding, it really depends. It's a situational thing. In those times, it was a common thing that it was specifically kings, or specifically if they're holding the things that are mentioned in the Mishnah, or whatever, different places, different things, they'll have different criteria of what they worship versus what's for decoration. Which, by the way, this is probably a good place to point out. We started discussing yesterday the question, what about crosses? So actually, you have the question, what exactly is the din about a cross? So in fact, the Mishnah doesn't directly address crosses, because when the Mishnah was written, there wasn't a common thing yet. Yeah. But in later times, when it was, by the times of the Rishonim, it became a common thing, of course. So what is the din with them? So one approach is that the it depends. Are we talking about a cross like they have hanging up on the wall in their church or whatever that they actually worship in front of? That would be considered a selim, like we're talking about over here in our Mishnah, and that would have one set of dinim. Versus, for example, the little ones that they wear around their necks can have a different set of dinim, because though they don't necessarily worship, those they have for decorative purposes.
But if they kiss them?
If they kiss them, that kissing is not necessarily worship. So the Shach says also that it depends whether they actually worship it. Sometimes the ones on the neck, they also worship. But there's also, other Acharonim point out the fact is we see sometimes they have no problem going into the bathroom with them, they have no problem going into the bathhouse with them, so therefore, as we'll learn later on in the Paradise, if you have something like that that habitually they bring into a place like that, it's not necessarily considered an object of worship as a decoration. It represents Avodah Zarah, but that's not the same thing as being an actual object of Avodah Zarah itself. There's a thing brought from the Rishonim, I believe the Terumah Hadeshin brings it, about I think we mentioned it once before, about a bishop in those times who, whenever the Jews would visit him to honor him or whatever for what he was doing for the community or whatever it was exactly, he would hide all the crosses on his clothes, because he wanted the Jews to be able to bow down to him and honor him without, and he knew they're not going to if he has crosses on it on his clothes and whatnot. So he's willing to set aside his Avodah Zarah for the sake of his calling.
No, that's permitted.
No, if you're bowing to him out of honor to him, he's a bishop, but on the other hand, he's also a ruler. The fact of the matter is, he's a temporal ruler as well. In that sense, you bow down to him just like you bow down to a king. I mean, we know in the Megillah, Mordechai didn't bow down to Haman, not because you're not allowed to bow down to a human being, but because Haman was making himself an Avodah Zarah, and he had Avodah Zarah on his clothes.
He had a necklace.
That's the whole point. But if it hadn't been for that, you find in the Megillah that Esther bows down in front of Ahasuerus, right? But people look near Raglov, she falls on her face in front of him and pleads with him because he's not making himself a Geshke. And he didn't have Geshkes on his clothes. Haman did. So there's a difference. Yeah. Okay. Getting back to the Gemara. Omar
Rabba. A regular king.
So a regular king, you bow down to him.
Yeah,
of course.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Omar Rabba.
In English, the great rabbi of England.
I have no idea.
Down to the queen.
I have no idea what he did.
There are other cultures where that's part of, like in Japan, they bow like a handshake. So you handshake the emperor.
No, not just the emperor, any person. Yeah.
Each other. Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, so I don't know. Okay. Omer Rabba Machloikas B'Shokfarim. So Rabba says this whole Machloikas that we're talking about in our Mishnah about whether all the statues are also a mutter is only ones that are in the villages. But if they're in large cities, then even Reb Meir would agree they're mutter. So on the face of it, the reason is because in the cities we assume they're just doing it for decoration. In the villages where people are poor, they don't have money to spend on frivolous decorations like that, and the standard they're doing it for worship. My time, the reason is because in the cities we assume they just made it for decoration. So the question then becomes, what are you talking about? How could you say in villages, how could you have an opinion that they're only making them for decoration? If they make them in a village, there's no question they have them for worship, because again, they're not spending money on decorations for a little village like that. So Tosfos points out there's two ways of understanding the question, basically. Are we saying that the machlokas is in villages, but even in villages themselves, not all of them are worshipped, but we're going to ask all the ones in villages, according to the mayor, to be on the safe side, whereas the Chachamim will disagree with that. Or are we saying that, practically speaking, the metzius is that any statue that you find in a village is going to be worshipped? Nobody makes statues in villages just for decoration. So we can't understand the machlokas that way. Ela I Itmar Hochi Itmar. No, rather we have to say, if it was said, if Rabba said any such thing, this is what he said. Omer Rabba, the other way around. Machloikas b'shal krakim. The machloikas is when you find a statue in a big city. Was it, according to the mayor, all of them, or at least subject to the conditions that we said before, are made for worshipping them? Then they're worshipped at least once a year. Whereas according to the Chachamim, not necessarily. But if you find them in a village, then there's no question it's usher, because then there's no question, even according to the Chachamim, whatever it's holding, whatever it's not holding, they're going to be bowing down to it, because they didn't just make it in a little village for decoration. Nobody does that. Okay, so the bottom line that we have so far then is, again, according to the mayor, we have the different explanations of the Rishonim about the Gemara over here, but it comes out, according to the mayor, if it's in a village, and according to the Chachamim, if it's in a village, it's definitely also, regardless how it's shaped, regardless what it's made holding, etc. If it's in the city, the mayor is going to be saying that it is also depending on the criteria we said before. We said, according to Rashi, it would have to be that Rav Meir is saying only if it's a statue of a king, and Rav Yochanan is that Shmuel is saying only if it's a statue, according to Rav Meir, only if it's a statue of a king, and Rav Yochanan would be saying only if it's by the entrance of the city. According to Tosfos, it's the other way around. The Chachamim will say that we're makel on it. We're not assuming it's full worship if it's a statue of a living king, because they probably just did it because they like him, whether it's in front of depends on whether we understand that Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel are arguing, which is another machloket again, that you have the Rambam understanding that they're arguing, and the Rif and the Rosh and so forth understanding that they're not arguing. That the Chachamim would say if it's a statue of a king, that unless it's a statue of a king and it's standing by the entrance of the city, then it's not also if it's a statue of a dead king and it's standing by the entrance of the city, that is and it's holding one of these things that we said in the Mishnah, that's where the Chachamim would say it's also.
A king or an emperor.
Well, right. I mean, emperor is just a greater king, but yeah.
It's different.
Yeah, okay, it's the same principle, though. Okay. Then we said, the Chachamim Omrim Ein Asurin. We said in the Mishnah that the Chachamim say it's only Asur if it's holding one of these things that are listed in the Mishnah, a stick, a bird, or a bowl.
Right.
So why? What's the symbolism? Why would they have to use these things to represent dominion? Makil, the reason why they make the idol holding a stick, because it subjugates itself under the whole world like you would do with a stick. Now, really, what it means to say is, in other words, that they believe that this Geshke has power and rules over the whole world as if like you rule over an animal with a stick. However, we know when we talk about Avodah Zarah, we have to talk about it in a derogatory way. We'll see examples of it later in the parak. So therefore, the Gemara puts it in this derogatory way over here, to say not that the idol is above the whole world, like as if it's dominating with a stick, but the other way around, as if the whole world is dominating it with a stick. But we understand what the Gemara means to say. Kola olam tachas, kola olam kula. He puts himself under the whole world, kamakel, like you do with a stick.
Uh-huh.
But really, of course, it means that they believe the other way around. Yeah. Sipper, why would they use a bird as symbolism? Same idea. Shatofas atasme, tachas kol olam kulei kesipper, because they consider it. He holds himself under the whole world like you hold a bird. Like you hold a bird, and it's something that you can easily crush or whatever. And in fact, the Yerushalmi brings in this connection, a pasuk from the Navi Yeshaya quotes part of Sancheiriv boasting about how I conquered the whole world and I'll conquer Yerushalayim as well. He says I collected all the nations and then was able to do whatever I wanted with them. Like you find eggs scattered around in the forest, and you can just collect them, and nobody's bothering you. So therefore, holding a bird is a symbolism of power. Right. So therefore, if they make the idol holding a bird, then it has that symbolism. Yeah.
By the way, on all the Egyptian hieroglyphs, there's always birds.
There was birds. I don't know if they necessarily have their idols holding them, but okay.
They're not holding. Right. But there are birds.
Yeah, okay.
And they consider them to be.
Okay.
Tophet switches the stomach with the sin.
Yes, so it's a stomach and a sin are interchangeable like that, yeah. The actual properly speaking, it is supposed to be the sin. In Tanakh, I think, when it uses that shoulder, it's the sin. In Gemara terminology, usually in Mishnah and Gemara, it's usually written with a stomach just because without Nekudis, you would have a hard time telling between a shin and a sin. So many times they substitute a stomach, but yeah. Okay. And Kadu, why would they carve the idol holding a bowl? Chitofa Satasma, Chakasalotam Kula Kakabi, because it holds, they're saying, it holds itself under the whole world like a ball, meaning, of course, the other way around, but meaning, in other words, because the earth is ball-shaped. Tosfos brings in this connection, the famous thing, that Alexander the Great one time went up high. Tosfos doesn't elaborate how, so either he went up to a tall tower, or he had a magic carpet, or who knows what, whatever, to the point where he could see the whole world like a ball. So the world is ball-shaped. And therefore, if they carve the idol holding a ball, then it means that they mean to represent that idea.
1600 years, so the church don't understand that.
Well, no,
it
didn't. Never mind. No, Galileo wasn't. It's another thing about what revolves around what, the earth around the sun or the sun around the earth. No.
No,
they didn't. First of all, after Columbus, nobody thought that. But even before Columbus, they knew the earth is round. Abba, they thought the world is its proper size. He thought it's smaller than it is. If there hadn't been America in the way, you would never have heard from the man again. He would have died someplace out in the ocean. But anyway, no. Anybody with a shrittle education knew already that the world is round.
I thought science thought it was flat.
No. It's definitely not by the time of Galileo, but not even by the time of Columbus. It's a myth. Anyway, let's go on. Not the whole time. It took them time to figure it out. But by the time of the Gemara, or certainly by the time of Columbus, it was a generally accepted idea.
Columbus, yeah. When?
Columbus, 1492. Yeah. In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. Yeah.
And they knew that the earth is round.
They knew the earth is round already. Yeah. All right, let's go on. We can read it in any history book. Let's go on. Okay, Tana, we learn in a Braisa. Later on, the Chachamim added three other things that an idol might be holding, which also symbolize that they worship it, because again, it means that these things symbolize that the idol has, that they consider the idol to have power, and therefore that we know they worship it, and therefore they're also b'ana. Why these three? Sayif atara v'tabas, a sword, so there's your answer, there's your thing about swords. A crown or ring. So why did they ask?
They worship the sword?
Not they worship the sword. They worship an idol that's made holding
the
sword. Yeah.
Right.
So why is that? Sayif, when it comes to a sword, ni'ikra stavur, because originally the Chachamim figured that doesn't necessarily show that the idol is worshipped, because listim ba'alma. They figured, okay, they made a statue in honor of some person, of some robber who knew how to wield a sword.
Right.
So therefore, that wasn't a reason when the Mishnah was composed. The Chachamim didn't feel that that's a reason to say that such a statue is generically worshipped and therefore it should be altabana. All of a sudden, later on, the Chachamim realized, no, what it means is, why did the goy make it with a sword? It means that they represent by that this deity, this idol, whatever, kills itself under the whole world with a sword, meaning obviously the other way around, as if it has the power of life and death over the whole world, and therefore they carve it with a sword. Similarly, Aptora, Me'ikra Sovel Godo Clearly Ba'alma.
Rashi rectifies that, and he says...
No, Rashi does. Rashi says, Loshen Gnai Nocket, yeah. It's a dysphemism, the opposite of a euphemism, yeah. Okay. Aptora, why if they make it with a crown, does it mean this? Me'ikra Sovel Godo Clearly Ba'alma. Originally, the Chachamim thought that it means, okay, they carved the idol holding a crown. It just represents they wanted to honor, they made it in honor of some person who was an expert in weaving or making crowns. Doesn't necessarily mean that they worship it. Later on, they realized that the Chachamim said that no, what it means is they're representing by that it's like a crown for a king, but they're like crowning this idol and making it an object of worship, as if it surrounds the whole world like a crown, whatever. Yeah.
It's like any crown would be for a king, huh?
No, but the point is, if they're carving it, no, we're not talking about a crown on a head. We're talking about if it's holding a crown.
Oh,
yeah.
If this idol
is carved, holding a crown, then that's what we're saying. That's another example of it's holding something where now we say that's also b'ana.
Because
it means that they worship it.
Wearing a crown.
If it's wearing a crown, it's sound of the same thing. But then I guess there's lots of chiddush in it. Could mean holding a head with a crown on it, also possible, I guess, yeah. Yeah, could be. That would probably be the same thing as cherev, though. That would probably be the same thing as tayef, as a sword, yeah. Could be. Okay. What about tabas? What about if it's holding a ring, which in those times a ring generally meant a signet ring that has a seal on it? Me'ikra Sovo Ishtayim of Alma. So originally the Chachamim did not ask those such a statue vana as a blanket statement, because they figured that it means the Goyim made it that way to represent they're honoring somebody who was they're honoring somebody who carried a seal for his master. Like they're making a statue in his honor to represent what a faithful secretary or whatever he was. All of a sudden, later on, the Chachamim realized what it means is, by carving it with holding a ring, they mean to represent that this deity supposedly consign itself under the whole world for death. Again, meaning the other way around, as if like it consign away the whole world, the whole world for death. It has power of life and death, and like it consign away their lives or whatever. Yeah, and therefore it means it's an object of worship. A ring, yeah. You usually sign in those days. A ring usually had a seal on it, and you would use it to stamp and in clay or wax or whatever to show to make it official. Yeah.
It says about Yehuda when they saw these signets.
About Yehuda when they saw.
Yeah.
Oh, well, the one that he gave Tamar, you mean? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you have a number of examples like that. Yeah. So those three things were added. So therefore, altogether, you have a list of six things according to the Chachamim, which if a statue is holding them, then it's also the Hanah, because we know for a fact they worship it.
What's the difference here between the statues doing this versus a living king that's doing one of these things?
So a living king is doing one of these things. Okay, that's part of his job as a king. But if they make a statue in his honor, then it means that they're worshiping it. If they
wouldn't worship a living king.
They might, if he declares himself a god, that would be a different issue. But if it not necessarily did kings in those days declare themselves gods. Sometimes they did. Haman wasn't a king, but he was a viceroy. But whatever. The point is that you had some kings, some Roman emperors, for example, that did that, and that kappa would create a problem bowing to them or whatever. But yeah.
Or
Hana,
I guess. So you wouldn't have Hana with the living.
Right.
Living.
Yeah. It's worth mentioning in this connection that we're saying that they would make their idols in various ways to represent that they supposedly they have the power of life and death over people. Shlomo Shneur Paul Hirsch points out in his commentary in a few places that one of the names we have for Goyish for Goyish deities is Elilim. And he says Elilim, so what does the word Elilim mean? Literally means nothingness is. But he says it also comes from the word Al as in not. Like they say, the power of their God is that he's able to say not, that he's able to deny, life or health or crops or what have you. That's how they represent. How? In what way is this God powerful? Because he has the power to prevent the crops from growing. Or he has the power to whatever. Whereas we look at it the other way around. It's not that Hashem has the power to punish and to kill. It's that Hashem has the power to bring alive. Of course he has both. But we don't focus so much on the Al. We focus on what Hashem gives. Okay, anyway, but the Rishva points out, by the way, that these are also meant as a continuation of the derogatory thing. When the Gemara is saying originally they thought that a sword represents a list in Baalma, it means, in other words, originally they figured that it doesn't represent that this king, that they're worshipping this king or this dead person or whatever as a deity, but just they're honoring him. How did he become a king? Because he was powerful with a sword, and therefore he was able to kill his way to the top. Eventually, the Chachamim realize that means they're actually worshiping him for that. By the Goyim, that's considered a great Mila, that he was able to kill his way to the top, and therefore they make a god out of him. And the same thing with the other ones.
Instead of saying he's just a murderer.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right, then we said in the Mishnah of Shimon Gamliel, we said Rav Shimon Gamliel says if the idol is holding anything, then it's Osabana. Tana, so we learn in a Braita, that means, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, afilu tzur, afilu kesem, even if the idol is just holding a little stone, a pebble, even if it's holding a chip of wood,
anything,
because the fact that they carve it holding something can also mean, for example, that they represent like the whole world is like a pebble compared to him or whatever. Okay, Boy Ravashi, so Ravashi asked the question, what if you find an idol which is carved holding a piece of dung?
Wow.
What would be the din? Do we say that they made it in order to represent like the whole world is like a piece of soya relative to this deity? Or maybe not. Maybe just the opposite. They carved it that way to represent. This is not something to worship. This idol, or whatever it represents, is like a nothing. Don't even think of worshiping it. It's as worthless as a piece of stone. Take it. We don't know.
Big question.
Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, Hamaitse Shivrei Tzlomin. If somebody finds broken pieces of statues. Now, keep in mind, you know, we just, we, we, So the word plumbing literally means statues, but the question is, which is what we're going to deal with in the Gemara, are we talking, remember, there can be statues, we established just now, that there are statues that are worshipped, and there are statues that are just decorated. When we say broken pieces of statues, which kind are we talking about? We also have to consider, how were they broken? There's the, on the face of it, Tosfos points out, there can be up to three different ways.
Which part are we talking about?
Which kind are we talking about? Are we talking about the kind that are worshipped, or are we talking about the kind that are not necessarily worshipped? The kind that are, if you see a piece, well, that, but no, but there can also be the question. In other words, so if you have, there's a, if you have, one second, if there's a statue that you know was worshipped, and now you find it broken in pieces, is that what the Mishnah is talking about? Is that what the Mishnah is talking about when the Mishnah says, or are we talking about only a decorative statue if you find broken pieces of it? So that's one of the things we're going to be dealing with in the Gemara. The other question we have to consider also, which is going to be very relevant, is how did the statue break? Now, when you get down to it, Tosfos points out, based on the Gemara, based on the continuation of the Gemara, when you get down to it, you have three possible ways that a statue can break. You have it can just spontaneously break, you know, there was an accident or something, and it fell down and broke. You can have a goy broke it, and you can have a Jew broke it. Now, here's the thing. If it breaks by itself, that's what we're going to be part of what we're going to be dealing with in the Gemara, whether it's mutter or not. If the goy breaks it, that's more reason to be matir it, because we're going to discuss more extensively later on in the parak, we're going to discuss the whole concept of bittul. You can have an actual idol, an actual statue that was actually worshipped by a goy, that can become bottle, it can be nullified and made no longer an object of Avodah Zarah, by the goy doing something to demonstrate that he no longer believes in it.
And then you can have an offering.
And then you can have an offering, yes. So we'll
what about this statue in Brazil? It was like 30 feet high.
Okay.
And there was a storm, and it crashed on a church and destroyed everything.
I haven't heard of it, but that would be what we're going to deal with over here if it broke by itself.
Yeah.
So again, if the goy breaks it, then there's more reason to be master it, because that's a form of bittul.
Yeah.
If it broke by itself, not necessarily. That's what we're going to have to discuss in the Gemara. And if a yid broke it, now it's true, if a yid broke it, it would remain also, because a yid does not have the capability to be mevakel of a disorder. However, Tosfos points out that if a yid were to break it, he wouldn't just leave the pieces lying around, he would get rid of them so that other people don't... No, but whatever it is, we can assume that among the various possibilities how it broke, the chance that a yid broke it, which would therefore leave it also bahana, is not very likely. So that's what we're going to deal with in the Gemara. So first the Mishnah. No, but practically speaking, if you leave the pieces of it around, people are likely to end up having hana from it, and that would be also if it was used for worship. What?
It could be a statue.
Yes. No, but you still have to somehow get rid of the pieces.
No, he's asking, is it
mevatel at all? It's mevatel is the expression that Tosfos uses. If a Jew broke it, he wouldn't just break it and leave the pieces lying around. He would destroy it completely. As we'll say later on in the parak, we'll say he'd grind it up and then throw it away or whatever. Yeah.
Does that mean the other way around, that in order to mevatel it, you have to destroy it completely?
No, because again, a yid can never be mevatel of a desire, period.
Even
for a goy to be mevatel of a desara, you don't necessarily need to be that he crushes it into tiny pieces. We'll talk about later on. We may get to it today. We may get to it tomorrow. We'll see. We'll talk about, for example, if a goy dents it, that's enough to be mevatel it.
But let's talk about a yid. Even if the yid throws it down, crushes every piece, it's still not mevatel.
Right. It's still the pieces. If it was worshipped, that's still also bahana. Yeah. That's what we're going to deal with later on in the parak, how exactly you go about destroying Avodah Zarah in such a way that no hana will end up being had from it. Yeah. Okay. So the Mishnah says, Hamotzei Shivrei Tzlamim, if a person finds broken pieces of statues, and again, we're going to have to figure out whether we mean statues that are worshipped or not, Harei Elu Mutarim, and those pieces are mutar. This is the Mishnah. Motza Tavnis Yad Oy Tavnis Regel. On the other hand, if you find the image of a hand or the image of a foot, Hareil or Asturim, then those things are also Mipnesha Kayoyti Behen Nevad, because things of that type are actually worshipped. Sometimes the Goyim will make an image of a hand or an image of a foot and worship it all by itself. They found such statues.
What about all the statues that they found in Israel that represent actually deities, and they keep...
But even if they represent deities, do they necessarily worship them? We're going to give an example. We're going to give
archaeologists say.
Maybe. Archaeologists don't know any more than the rest of us whether they actually worship them. If they find... if they're off Divine Mel, it's true, they shouldn't be able to. But again, we're gonna have an example later on in our Perek, for example. We're gonna give an example over there. There was a bathhouse that had a statue of an idol named of a deity named Aphrodite, named Aphrodite, Venus, whatever. And Rabbi Gamliel went and bathed in that bathhouse and didn't have a problem with it. We'll discuss later on. And then, hey, we'll discuss why is that, how he was allowed to do that. But not every statue, even if it represents a known Greek or Roman or what have you deity, was necessarily made for worship. Some of them they only made for decoration. Okay, so anyway, so yeah. So this that was saying...
Even if they made them for decoration, the fact that a big tzaddik comes and bathes next to it can be interpreted as an acceptance.
That's why we will discuss later on. And then, hey, that is fact a goy called in my math, and I'm going to explain why it's allowed. Wait.
It's about an eye, direct or about it?
Basically, we're talking Doraisa. In some cases, it may be Dirabaran. We talked before, according to the mayor, that he may make a Xera because of the Mios on the road. But the, by and large, when we talk about that it's also Bahano, we usually mean Doraisa. Okay, this, by the way, that we're saying that a hand or a foot by itself, there's a number, the vote that's brought from a number of different Achronim. I've seen it in the name of the Chidor, I've seen it in the name of the Zomigoran, I've seen it in the name of, I forget already who else, that... This explains how is it we say in Hallel, we say, when we talk about the worthlessness of Getchkas, we say, what do we say over there? A Naim Lahem B'lo Yiru, or Naim Lahem B'lo Yishmo, Ach Lahem B'lo Yerichun, etc.
Oh, you talk about Getchkas?
Getchkas, idols, yeah. So we say... What
about Goyim?
No, of course, the Goyim have eyes and they see.
So, what do they see?
What do you mean they see? They see the world.
They
still see the world around us. When we say, Asabehem Kesef Zahav, their idols of silver and gold, Masi Yedei Adam, Elohem B'lo Yidaberu, no, it means idols. Kamoyim, you say them. We say later on, let their lows will make them become like them. Anyway, the point is, so we say, Naim Lahem Bala Yuru, Naim Lahem, they have eyes, but they don't see. They have eyes, they have ears, but they don't hear. But then we continue. We don't continue, they have hands, but they don't move. Yudehem Bala Yuru, it doesn't say, yes, it doesn't say, Yudayim Lahem Bala Yumishu. It's Yudehem, their hands, Bala Yumishu, but they don't touch anything. Raglehem, their feet, Bala Yuhalechun, they don't walk. So what's the difference? Why don't we say, what's the difference? Why don't we say, Yadayim Lahem, Raglayim Lahem, based on our Mishnah over here? Because there's no such thing, for example, as an individual eye that they worship at a Hashem Adazara. Therefore, a Naim Lahem, the statue, has eyes, but it can't see. When it comes to hands and feet, we're saying over here, they can have a statue of an individual hand or foot and worship it. So we can't say Yadayim Lahem, that's just the statues have hands, they have feet. Sometimes the whole statue itself can be a hand or a foot. Therefore, we change the wording and we say Yadayim and Raglayim.
Nice.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
How does the statue walk?
It doesn't walk. That's the point. They don't walk. They don't walk. Raglehem v'lo
yahalei.
No, v'lo yahalei means they don't walk. No, that's the point. In other words, the Goyim believe that these statues have all kinds of godly powers and whatever, but they can't even see, they can't even hear, they can't even nothing. Fine. So the Gemara starts off. Omer Shmuel, afilu shivrei avodas lechavim. When we say in our Mishnah that broken pieces of a statue are mutter, that means even if it was actually worshipped. No, even if it was actually worshipped. Shivrei avodas lechavim, where it was literally used for avodah zara. But because it's broken now, therefore says Shmuel is mutter. Now, so Rashi learns that. Rashi learns the reason is because. Once it's broken, they don't worship it anymore. So that Tosfos begins by discussing the whole question.
Even the broken pieces, it sounds.
Yes, that's what he's saying. When the Mishnah says Shivrei Tzlomim, says Shmuel, it doesn't just mean statues, decorative statues.
Shivrei.
The Mishnah had said Shivrei. Shmuel was also saying Shivrei.
Right.
Shmuel is just saying, when we say in the Mishnah Tzlomim, it doesn't mean non-worshipped ones. It means even worshipped ones. Yeah. Of worshipped one. You had an actual statue of Pur or Merkulis or what have you, and it broke. Shmuel is saying you're allowed to use the pieces. Now, so again, Rashi is saying the reason is because once it's broken, they don't worship it anymore. Tosfos starts discussing the point, does that mean that Shmuel would hold that if a statue broke all by itself, it would be mutter? Now again, if the goy broke it, there's no question it's mutter. But does that imply that Shmuel holds that once it broke by itself is also mutter? So actually here Rashi is mentioning the idea that once it's broken, they don't worship it, which seems to imply that it's enough that it broke by itself. Later on in the parak, Rashi gives a different explanation, which is that the goyim usually take care of their statues. They don't just break spontaneously. If it's broken, it has to mean the goy got angry and broke it, which is bittul. So that's the question. When we say that Shmuel was saying broken pieces of an Avodah Zarah statue are mutter, is he talking about because even if it broke by itself, it would be mutter? Or is he talking about because we can assume that the goy broke it?
I thought if it broke by itself, it's not mutter.
That's what we have to figure out. One way of looking at it, which is what Rashi seems to be saying over here, even if it broke by itself, once it broke by itself, they don't worship it anymore. Therefore, in other words, they're mevatel it after the fact. As the Gemara is going to say on the base, they figure it couldn't even protect itself. It's not going to protect me.
He could have been angry that he didn't do anything and broke it, but still believes in Avodah Zarah.
He may believe in Avodah Zarah. That doesn't matter. The point is he doesn't believe in this particular statue.
Right.
Okay. Fine. So that's Shmuel. So the question is, V'anantanan Shivrit Slonim. Our Mishnah specifically said broken pieces of statues, implying that they may be only decorative statues.
And
where is Shmuel getting that it means
right.
even Avodah Zarah ones?
Right.
The answer is, Hu Adin Dafka the Shivra Avodah Sefavim. Shmuel will say, no, it means even broken pieces of ones that were actually worshipped. The Hodjik, it's
only
Shivri.
Only.
No. Even, obviously if it wasn't worshipped, the broken pieces are going to be mutter. But even if it was worshipped, Shmuel will say.
They're
mutter.
Okay,
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. The Hodjik, it's only Shivri. And the reason why, according to Shmuel, the Mishnah specifically mentions broken pieces of statues, as if to imply that if they're worshipped, they would be mutter. Mishum, the Kabori, the Mishnah safer, because the Mishnah needs to continue with the case, mutter tabnis, yad tabnis, regal harel asurin, that if you find an image of a hand or a foot, then it's also, because that kind of thing is worship. So therefore, once the second part of the Mishnah, so if the Mishnah had specifically mentioned the word avodis kechavim, then you would say that in general, if you found a hand or a foot, maybe it would be mutter, because they don't necessarily worship it. By saying the word slumin implies any time you find a whole hand or a whole foot, which the Gemara is going to say later, we're talking about in a way that makes it obvious that something that's still worshipped, then it's also. Then it's also.
How would the Mishnah? Would have been
if the Mishnah had said Hamoitz Shivrei Avodis Kechavim Harei El Matarin, then you would misunderstand when is it also a hand or a foot only if you know it was worshipped, but not if you don't know. By saying Slumim implies if you find a hand or a foot,
you know,
we have to assume it's also, provided that it's on a stand, as the Gemara is going to say later. Okay, fine. Tanan, the Gemara says, let's look at our Mishnah. Mata tavnis yad tavnis regel harei lasser. In our Mishnah had said that he found an image of a hand or a foot, then it is awesome, Nishakayotu by never, because that kind of thing is worship. The question is, Amai, why should those be awesome? Aren't they broken pieces? So Tosfos and some of the other Rishonim explain that the question is specifically on Shmuel. If we didn't have Shmuel's statement, we would make a distinction between whether they're worshipped or not. But once we have Shmuel's statement that our Mishnah is talking whether they're worshipped or not, then the tzlamim of our Mishnah is whether they're worshipped or not, then why are we asking generically a hand or a foot? Some of the Rishonim explain that rather the question is going back generally on the Mishnah, that we're saying that the Mishnah is saying, even if we don't accept Shmuel's statement, still the Mishnah mentioned tzlamim, but then it says a hand or a foot is also, so why should a hand or a foot be more also than any other broken piece? The answer is Tirgum HaShmuel, but only not the system. Shmuel explained, the Mishnah is talking about when it says a hand or a foot, when they're on a base. So what does that mean? Rashi learns that it means that you find the hand or foot on top of a base, on top of a pedestal, where they normally put their idol.
You find
a pedestal, and then you find on top of it, you find an individual hand or foot. Then you can assume, why is it on a pedestal? Because in the Sabbath, they put it up there.
What
so
about
it for
you find an arm?
A hand and an arm includes a hand.
Or a head or whatever.
So a head apparently not. So we're saying a hand or a foot. Specifically, they would worship by itself. A head on a pedestal would just be for decoration, apparently. But I don't know. Anyway, the point is, according to Rashi, that's what it means. According to Tosfos, it means, Rabbeinu Tam, in Tosfos, that it means not we're talking about that you happen to find it on top of the pedestal. It means to begin with, it was made with a pedestal. To begin with, it was made on a base where you can tell. The hand, you can tell that the head was made with a base where therefore you know it was to begin with cast or carved or whatever in that way, and therefore
that's
it's obviously worse.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is less likely that foot is going to break by itself rather than a big statue.
No, because we're saying, in other words, if you find an individual foot, we're saying it's also because they could conceivably worship an individual foot. That's what we're saying. So the question.
I'm saying it's less likely, a little foot statue is less likely to break.
Well, that's true, but that's not the point. The Mishnah is just saying, obviously, yeah, if a foot statue breaks, then yeah, you would have the same dinim. It's broken pieces.
Right.
But yeah. We're talking about, in other words, the Gemara was asking, why should a hand or a foot be any different, let's say, than a head or a torso or whatever? And the answer is because if it's on a base, then we know they worship it by themselves. If it's on a base or it's on a pedestal, then we know they worship it by itself. As opposed to they wouldn't worship a head by itself or a torso by itself or whatever, and therefore there's no issue with that. Therefore, it's no different than any other group. They wouldn't necessarily put it on a pedestal, though, which is someplace that they worship on. A pedestal is like a base that they put a statue on top of. So if they're putting it on top of there, a platform like it. Okay. It's
mine. Saying a hand, yeah. A foot is more likely than any part.
Right. Okay. It's mine. So now we have a discussion further on this topic. Avodas kachavim sheneshtab ramei aleha. If an idol breaks on its own, it breaks, there was an accident or whatever, nobody broke it, it happened to break. What's the difference? Rabbi Yochanan Amar Asura, Rabbi Shimon Lakash Amar Muter. So Rabbi Yochanan says it remains Asur because, if the guy broke it, fine, it was Mevatel. But because it broke by itself, we can't necessarily assume that anybody was Mevatel.
By itself, let's say, do you mean that it was thunder that
There was a storm and it knocked over. Yeah, whatever it was. Something that wasn't done necessarily. Wasn't, yeah, whatever it is. Yeah. Okay. So Rabbi Yochanan says it's Asur, Rabbi Lakash says it's Muter. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Asura the Holei Bakla. Rabbi Yochanan says it's also because nobody was Mabakla, and therefore it remains also. Rabbi Shimon Rish Lakish Amar Muteres Rish Lakish says it is Muter because Mistama Batulim Mabakla, because we can assume that the guy at that point would have been Mabakla. So some of the Rishonim learn that we're talking about specifically if it happened in the guy's presence. Other Rishonim learn, not even maybe, it could be that it was not in his presence, but when he finds out about it, as soon as he finds about it, he's going to be Mevatelet. Meima Omer, because the Goy is going to figure to himself, Ihi Napshalai Asla, this idol couldn't even save itself, Lahi Gavlahu Gavra Masla, would it be able to save me? Obviously not, and therefore he'd be Mevatelet, says Rish Lakish. The question really is, he will go worship some other Geshke, or go worship some other idol, but not this particular one. As the Gemara is going to...
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, so the Gemara is going to say in a second, wait. We'll talk about Dograin, hold on. We'll talk about a story in the Tanakh involving Dograin, but just a second.
You see the broken idol.
The question.
This one,
but a different one, yeah. Because the other one obviously wasn't.
That's the one way he's worshiping. Yeah. He thinks it has a power.
He thinks it has a power,
yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that's the point. So that's why do we say that once it's broken?
Yeah, he sees that it's destroyed, that he knows, that he knows that the power is left.
The other one was
so whatever, because he's Fartagoy, but yeah. Okay, anyway, fine. Anyway, the point, the question is, how does Shmuel's statement fit with this machloikas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish? So one way of looking at it is that Shmuel is specifically only working according to Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish was saying that on Avodah Zarah that broke on its own is mutter, that can be made to fit with what Shmuel is saying on Amar Aleph, that even a statue that was worshipped, once it's broken, is mutter. That's how Rashi learns, for example. On the other hand, and the Rambam also understands it that way, the Rambam does not bring Shmuel's shitta, the Rambam only brings Rabbi Yochanan's shitta, implying that he doesn't accept Shmuel, and when it comes to a machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, as usual, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, so therefore that's it, it's also, if it broke by itself. On the other hand, the Rambam holds that it's also if it breaks by itself. The only way it becomes mutter is if the goy broke it. On the other hand, the Rif, on the other hand, brings both. He brings... So of course that's the thing. If he broke it, then it means he was Mamakula. It means he doesn't believe in this idol.
The Rambam, that's the only way it could be.
Right. But on the other hand, according to the Rif brings both Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel, which means he holds they're not contradicting each other, because he evidently understands it, that Shmuel was talking about the case where we find it broken, where there's less reason to use. It could have broken by itself, but it could also be the guy broke it. Here we'd be talking about, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we'd be talking about where we know for a fact that it just broke by itself. No, not necessarily. Not always. You could find it broken. You could come across it broken, and you don't know if a guy deliberately broke it, or if it broke in an accident or whatever. It can happen. Maybe nowadays forensic scientists could figure it out, but I don't know. Anyway. In Shulchan Aruch, actually, it brings both. In one place, in Shulchan Aruch, it says that if you find that if you find a broken idol, then you're allowed to use it, even if it was used for worship, which is like Shmuel. And in another place, a few simanim later, in Shulchan Aruch, it says that if an idol broke by itself, it's also like Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here. So that's the difference. Whether is it that you know for a fact it broke by itself, or is it you find it broken, and therefore, so again, you have the three possibilities. Maybe it broke by itself, which in that case, we would say it's Osir. Maybe the Goy broke it, in which case it would be Mutter. You also have, again, the third possibility that Tosfos said, maybe a Yid broke it, but that's less likely because then he would have just disposed of the pieces. And therefore, that's when we're saying it's Mutter, because then we have a sex faker, basically. Was this idol B'chlal worshipped? And even if it was, maybe the Goy broke it. And that's enough to be Mutter.
Today, that means that with new technology, you can
take the different pieces.
Yeah, okay.
Reconstruct them.
If reconstructing them is another matter. We're going to talk later on in the parak. If you have an idol that to begin with is made out of pieces, which are made to be taken apart and then put back together, then yeah, taking it apart is not mavakala. So I suppose what you're talking about. Yeah, okay, fine. But if they can easily be put back together, then it would
be. That's what I'm talking about. The pieces cannot be put back up together, but they can find how it was broken.
Okay, well, that's fine. Well, then if they can find out, they can find out. Fine. But if you can't find out, then yeah. Okay.
This opinion that holds that if it broke by itself and then he was mavakalit, I'm afraid we don't talk.
No, we could say if he's mavakalit, fine, but we can't say if we know for a fact it broke by itself, we don't know that he was mavakalit. Then we only have one suffix, was it worshipped or not?
Well, we're never going to know if he was mavakalit in his heart. Oh,
but he'd have, fine, but as long as we don't know, then we can't do that. Right.
Oh, so it's like
yeah.
The only way you know is to make some type of declaration.
Yes. Okay. So Rav Yochanan points out, here's a contradiction, Rish Lakish. You're telling me that if an idol breaks by itself, it's mutter. I'll bring you a pasuk. In Sefer Shmuel, it describes the story after the Plishtim captured the Aron, after the Plishtim captured the Aron, they took it and put it in the temple of their Geshke Dagon. And the next day, the idol has fallen over. Okay, they figured it's just an accident. They put it back up on a pedestal. The next day, they come back. What? No, wait. The next day, they come back. And here's where it was more than not just fallen down. It was broken. The head of Dagon and the two palms of its hand, were cut off. And put on the pedestal, not on the pedestal, they were put on the threshold of the building. So in other words, you have Hashem put them there because the Aron was there. So in other words, the first day they just found like Dagon was on the floor, as if like it was bowing to the Aron. So they figured it's just an accident and they put it back. The next day they actually come back, they find you have the body of the idol in one place, you have the head and the hands in another place on the threshold of the room. So obviously, it's not just an accident anymore. And still, they didn't want, still they weren't returning the order until they had all the sorrows that they started having anyway. The point is, and the next pasuk continues, Al-Kain, because of this, because the head and hands of Dagon were on the threshold, Lo Yiduchu Kain and Dagon, from then on, the priests of Dagon would never step on that threshold out of respect for the Geshke. So the question is, if you Rish Lakish, are saying, yes, so because the hen and the hand of it.
They moved them,
obviously. But the point is, from then on, they never stepped on that threshold out of respect. The point being that if Rish Lakish, you're telling me that once a Geshke breaks, then they're mavakalit. But we'll see over here, not only they weren't mavakalit, just the opposite. They're honoring it even more. But the place where its hands and its head were never going to step on again. So therefore, obviously, yeah.
It has to be.
Amalai, the Rish Lakish answers him, Misham Raya, you bring a proof from there. What it means is, Hosam Shaman Nichen, that's a Dagon, but Oven, that's a Mifton. What it means is, from then on, the Goyim abandoned worshipping that Dagon idol, and instead, but Oven, that's a Mifton. From then on, they transferred their allegiance, they transferred their worship to the threshold. From then on, they would worship the threshold instead of the Geshke. Not an addition. You're thinking it's an addition to. You're thinking about thinking they continued worshipping Dagon, and also from then on they respected the threshold. No, from then on they stopped worshipping the idol because it was broken, and they realized obviously it's worthless, but they started worshipping the threshold. Why? To Amri Haki, because they figured like this. Shavke Isore L'Dagon. Obviously they said to themselves, with their Goya Shaket, that Shavke Isore L'Dagon, the Sire, the Malach or whatever, the spiritual power that used to be on Dagon has abandoned it. But also Esav Le'alamistan. Now the Sire has taken up a new residence on the threshold, and therefore from now on we're going to worship the threshold. The Rabbi Yaakov Emnes points out, by the way, I mean Rashi says the word Isore means a Sire, and Rashi brings from other Gemaras where we see that the word Isore means that type of Sire. But the Rabbi Yaakov Emnes points out it's also meant in a derogatory sense. Again, Isore as if like he's tied up, like he has no independent power of his own, which is true after all. So therefore, that's why the Gemara uses the word Isore rather than a respectful word like Sire, because when we're talking about Avodah Zarah, we should always use a derogatory term. Anyway, the point is that Rish Lakish is saying, it's true. Once the idol was broken, and it wasn't broken by the Plishtim, from the Plishtim's point of view, it broke spontaneously. So therefore, yes, from then on, they abandoned the idol because they realized it itself is worthless. It couldn't protect itself. It's not going to protect us. All they did is then they transferred their worship. From then on, they're worshiping the threshold. Yeah. So no proof one way or the other. So Abba, I can argue from that. That's just the opposite. It means that once an idol is broken, it's bottled. automatically.
And the next day, the threshold was also broken?
No, no, the next day, no, it doesn't say that. But after that, they started having the plishtim were struck by diseases and by mice and whatever, and eventually they had to give in. And after 7 months of that, they finally gave in and returned the ark, which we talked about earlier in the Masechta, the whole story of the cows pulling the wagon, et cetera. Yeah.
Okay.
They turned
back.
Yeah. No, they turned their faces towards the Aron. Okay. Fine. Okay, so then Rabbi Yochanan asks on Rish Lakish another question. From our Mishnah, we say in our Mishnah that if you find broken pieces of statues, then they're mutter. And again, slumim, the pashtus means ones that are not worshipped.
Both.
It means just different. No, according to Shmuel, it meant both. Rabbi Yochanan doesn't have to assume that. He can assume that slumim means literally ones that are only decorative, ones that are only there, yeah. Only as plumim, not as avodah zarah, and the Mishnah said harei lemutarin and broken pieces of rambuter, implying hashivra avodah kachal maturin, implying if we know they came from an object that was worshipped, then they would be offered. The Yurish lakish are arguing would be mutter because the goyim is remarkable but once he discovers what happened, but the Mishnah doesn't say that. The answer is loy tem hashivra avodah kachal maturin. No. Don't derive from the Mishnah, don't deduce from the Mishnah that the Mishnah wants to make a distinction as far as the broken pieces between slumim and avodah kachal. Ella, Ema, Slomim, Asman, Asurin. Rather, understand that what the Mishnah wants to imply is if the statue is whole, then it is Asur, Ustam, and even if you don't know that it was worshipped, Ustam, Kedameir, which means that you have a Stam Mishnah like Rameir. The previous Mishnah, Rameir, had said that all statues, subject to the condition that we said before, are also Bahamal, because they're worshipped at least once a year. Our Mishnah is continuing in that vein, that our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah according to Rameir, saying that any Selim is assumed to be an object of worship. Therefore, as long as it's whole, it's mutter. But once it breaks, that's different. Because once it breaks, then the goy is mevatelet, says Rish Lakish. We can understand the Mishnah that way. So therefore, the Mishnah does not have to be distinguishing between slumim, whose broken pieces are mutter, and avodah zarah, whose broken pieces are aser. The Mishnah is distinguishing between whole and broken. Once it's broken, it doesn't matter whether it was a selim or an avodah zarah, says Rish Lakish. According to the mayor, that is.
Even though there was a case when it was broken.
But when it was whole, then Rameir would say, when it was whole, Rameir would say, Selam or Avodah Zarah. Also, when it's broken, Rameir would say, Selam or Avodah Zarah is mutter. So that's how Rish Lakish would learn the Mishnah.
So he doesn't hold...
That Rameir, in our Mishnah, would not be distinguishing between Selam and Avodah Zarah. As far as Rameir is concerned, every Selam is an Avodah Zarah. But once it's broken, and then it's broken, and you're good. Okay, Rav Yechanan, what would Rav Yechanan answer to that? He would answer, okay, but mid Rav Meir nishma lohu l'rabbanan, fine, but you want to say our Mishnah goes according to Rav Meir, fine, but based on his opinion, you can deduce what the Chachamim would say. After all, according to you, Rav Meir is saying that statues are always osur, because we always assume that they're worshipped, but the broken pieces are mutter.
Therefore
l'rabbanan, L'rabbanan, avodis kechavim nami. So the question isn't what Rabbi Yechon would say. The question is, how, in that case, once Rish Lakish is saying that all Mishnah is according to the mayor, even if Rabbi Yechon disagrees with that premise, even if he holds that all Mishnah is according to the Chachamim, why can't we use our Mishnah to determine, why can't we use Rameir's opinion to determine what the Chachamim would say?
Right.
Just like Rameir says, just like Rav Meir says, any selim is also because it's always used for idol worship, and nevertheless, he says, once it breaks, it's mutter, because the goyim are mevatelet. Well, one second. So the Rabbanan will say, okay, we do make a distinction between slomim and avodah zarah. We are going to say only if it has a stick or a ball or what have you, is it also, but not otherwise. Nevertheless, though, they should still be saying, nevertheless, they should still at least be agreeing with Rameir that the broken pieces are also. In other words, the same way as Rameir is saying that anything used to worship, once it's broken, is mutter, because the goyim give up on it. The Chachamim, at least, fine, they disagree with Rameir about which statues are worshipped and which ones are not. But the ones that are worshipped, which according to him are all of them, and according to the Chachamim are only some of them, they should still be agreeing that once they break, they're mutter. So fine, that our Mishnah works very well according to Rish Lakish. What is Rabbi Yechanan going to do? Why would he say that the Chachamim would be more machmir? And saying even when they're broken, if they were worshipped, they should be offered. Fine. Why don't we say that the goyim are malachol then?
Based on that reasoning.
Yes. The answer is the Gemara says Hochi Hashta. How do you think to compare the two cases? possum when it comes to the case of Tselem, which we don't know if it was worshipped, Emer Avodrum, Emer Loy Avodrum. There's two possibilities. First of all, maybe they worship them, maybe not. The Imtim Tselem Avodrum, Emer Bispum. And second of all, you have a suffix on top of that suffix. Even if they worship them, maybe when they broke, they were Mavassal them. So you have a suffix on top of a suffix, a spec faker. That's enough reason to be master.
The first suffix is whether they worship. Second is whether they were master.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Avodas kechavim, but if you know that the statue was worshipped at one point, Vada Yavdua, there's no question they worshipped it at one point. Miyema debakla, who says they were mevatel it? Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. Have a suffix, Vada. You have a suffix against the Vadai, because a Vadai that it was worshipped, a suffix whether they were mevatel it. And Rabbi Yechanan points out, Vein suffix mosti midei Vadai. You can't allow the suffix to take you out of the Vadai.
And therefore, in this case, that's
why Rabbi Yechanan is arguing, once you know that it was worshipped as a Avodah Zarah, it should be offered. Fine, Rabbi Meir can be makel in the ones where we're not sure if they're worshipped,
right.
And he's only saying there's a miut, and therefore
that's
we're going to be gozer on the goy, or whatever, yeah. But when we know that it was worshipped, says Rabbi Yechanan, how can you say that you're going to allow one suffix, were they mevatel or not? Fine, Rabbi Shlokish is going to argue maybe it's not a suffix, it's a badai, once they see it's broken, they're going to be mevatel for sure. Rabbi Yechanan doesn't have to accept that. Rabbi Yechanan can say it's a suffix, if it broke by itself, were they mevatel or were they not? Maybe they still believe in it after all.
But since you have a badai that it was
worshipped. Since you have a badai that was worshipped, then the suffix can override the badai, right.
And therefore
it should be also, right.
So that's
Rabbi Yechanan's answer. That's Rabbi Yechanan's answer. That is why he disagrees with Rish Lakish.
Rish
Lakish will say it's not a suffix. Maybe he'll say that it's not a suffix. He'll say it's a vadai that will move off the word Tosa. Yes. Tosfos, in fact, points out that even within stakers themselves, you have different levels. You have different levels of suffix. You have in particular, Tosfos makes a distinction between suffix hadrogil versus suffix she'enid rogil. Is it a common type of suffix, a common thing that it, because the difference is Tosfos says if it's something not very usual, that if it's something not very usual, then of course even then just the other way around. Even if you only have a suffix ister, you can't use it. In other words, here we're talking about there's a vadai on the ister,
right,
and a suffix on the heter. If it was an uncommon kind of situation, if the suffix you're talking about is an uncommon situation, then it would be the other way around. Even if the ister is only a suffix and the heter is a vadai, you wouldn't be allowed to. So if we're saying over here, if we're pointing out dafka because the suffix can't allow you to use the vadai, we have to be talking about it. It's a common kind of thing. It is a fairly common thing that when the goyim see their geshka broken, they will be mevatel. Nevertheless, the fact is it is only a suffix versus a vadai that they worshipped it at one point. And Rabbi Yechanan says that's not good enough. Therefore, you can't say it's mutter.
But that's understandable.
Okay, so Rish Lakish will argue that it's a screw and that's not just a suffix, that it's closer to a vadai that they were mevatel it. Rabbi Yechanan doesn't have to accept that. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to digress a little bit and talk about this concept of suffix moisim midei vadai. So the question is, ain suffix moisim midei vadai? You're telling me that a suffix cannot override a vadai? That when you have something which you know at one point was vadai also, and now you have a suffix, whether it became mutter or not, you're telling me that that doesn't work? Which is what Rabbi Yechanan is saying over here in the case of the Geshke. But no. Well, I don't know if throughout Shas, but the point is, the question is, we're going to ask, will we have a braisa to the contrary? V'hotanya, we learn in a braisa, chover shemes, if a chover who we know is trustworthy about trumas and maestris, if he dies, v'hiniach megura malei aperis, and he left over a container, a megura is a container where they would keep grain, a bin or whatever, full of peiris, full of produce, afilu hein b'nei yoyman, even if they were only completed, even if the malacha on them was only completed that day. So for example, with grain, the gemar malacha is miruach, is when you put the grain, the clean grain, in a pile and you smooth out the sides of the pile. That's called miruach, yeah, and that's the gemar malacha. We talked about it in many places. In Bava Metzia is one place. It's throughout Shas, this concept of gemar malacha. We may have had it in Yavama Sota, I don't remember. Anyway. The point is, at that point, it becomes chayev in meister.
When you smooth the pile,
yeah. So at that point, it becomes chayev in meister.
Right.
But we're saying, even if that took place only that day, and now the chover died, harein b'cheskes ha'sekonin. We have a chazaka that truma and meister has been taken, and that's not tevel anymore, and you're allowed to eat it.
Even though it's a vada?
That's the question. V'ha'ha'ha devade tefil. Here, the fact that it's tevel at one point is a vada. There's no question. Once nigma malachdon, we know that it becomes tevel at that point.
And we know that he didn't do anything else.
We don't know. That's the thing. We don't know whether he did Truma or Meiser. Sofik Asurin was Sofik La Asurin. You have a Sofik whether he took Meiser. Vikaosi Sofik or Moisim de Vadai. And yet we see that the Sofik is able to override the Vadai.
Right.
So therefore, what is Rav Yochanan saying that it can't?
Yes.
Yeah. That's the question.
Maybe it works only for Truma.
No. There's no reason to think that it
no.
would. No. Well, maybe. Well, that's what hold on.
If he smoothed it out or
not. No. We know that he smoothed it out.
He
we know he smoothed it out because
so
because they, once only once they smooth it out do they put it in the Megura. Once he puts it in the Megura in the bin, you know in general, and we'll see in a second. But in general,
once
it's a pile, then you take it out of the pile. You start picking up the pile with a pitchfork or whatever and putting it into the Megura.
Yes.
You
say
one for a
goy,
one for
a Jew
here? No. The answer is hosam vaday u vaday. Because in the case of the chover, it's not a vaday versus a sofik. It's a vaday versus a vaday.
The
vaday asrinu, because we can be sure that the chover took maizer from it.
Kidrav smoothing it?
No. After smoothing
not
it, before
smoothing
he...
It.
Wait, hold on. Kidrav chanina chayzah, which is why, and how does that work? Because of what Rav Chanina Chayzah said, the Amr of Chanina Chayzah, the famous expression, chazaka al chover she'eni moitim, dover she'eni mistukim, mitachas yadoy. We have a chazaka about a chover, that he will not allow something that's not being fixed up, something that's still in a bad state, to go out of his possession. Therefore, he being a chover, and the Rambam says specifically when we say a chover, we were talking about Tamas Chacham, which is the narrower definition of a chover, he won't leave something like that undone. If he put the produce in his Megura and then died, and Tosfos points out from the Yerushalmi, specifically, we're not talking about over here where he died in some unexpected way, then of course you don't have such a chazaka. He may have figured, if the guy dies in a car accident, for example, obviously he didn't think that was going to happen. He may have figured he still has time to separate Truma and Meiser. We're talking about where he died mitoch ha-yishuv, meaning b'yishuv ha-da'at, he died peacefully in his bed, so in a way that he knew that it was going to be coming. So therefore, we know we have a chazaka that he won't allow it to. He won't allow it to leave his possession still in a bad state. He will be mafresh truma and mafresh. No, person doesn't know when he's going to die, but he knows at least he can feel that he can feel it's approaching. So he'll make sure to leave everything in order. And remember, truma and maaser, you don't have to actually be there to separate the truma and maaser. He can verbally say, for example, 2% that's on the north side of it is truma, and 10% that's on the south side is maaser, and so forth. You don't have to actually be there in order to do that. So we can assume.
Yes.
Later on, it'll have to be separate. Later. Fine, but the point is that at least truma and maaser will have been separated.
Right.
Fine, later on you'll have to actually take out truma and maaser. You'll still have to take it out, but at least it will have been done.
It will have been accomplished.
Yeah. And not only he says it, bro.
Yeah,
that accomplishes that now truma and maaser has been taken. Now 80% or whatever of it is tevel, and then you can eat it. Fine, it's still in the pile, so you have to figure out what. So let's say that in previous times, let's say this chover has always said that his truma is going to be on the north side, and his maaser is going to be on the south side, or whatever. So therefore, you can based on this chazaka, you can do the same thing. You can do the same thing there. So therefore, again, it's not a vaday and a sofik. It's a vaday versus a vaday. No problem. So vaday against the vaday for sure works. So that's one answer why that's not relevant to our case over here about the broken idol.
So the case of the broken idol with Rish Lakish and Shmuel.
Yeah.
Isn't it in a way like Machlokes and Metzias? I mean, can't they test this out and see are they mevatel this? Is the normal way that a goyim mevatel this?
It's not a question of Metzias. Some goyim will be, some goyim won't be. Rish Lakish figures that in general a goyim will be mevatel this because he'll figure it didn't save itself. It's not going to be able to save me. Rabbi Yochanan doesn't accept that. Some goyim will think that way. It's not a question of consensus, though.
No,
some do, some don't. Yeah, you don't say.
Rabbi Yochanan says no.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's our according to Rish Lakish. Not according to Rish Lakish. Again, we just said before in connection with Zogoyin that it's not so much they worship the statue itself, they worship the star, the Easter, or whatever, the spiritual power behind it. So therefore, if it breaks, Rish Lakish figures, they're going to say, okay, the spiritual power has obviously deserted it and gone on to something else. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan would say they wouldn't necessarily say that. Yeah. Okay, so that's one answer that we have a Vaday versus a Vaday. Yeah. Another answer is that you could argue in the case of the produce, not necessarily is it a vadai that it was originally tevel, sofik v'sofik, where you can argue, fine, let's not say we accept that chazaka about the chavis. But on the other hand, it's a sofik, fine, whether we took truma and meiser, it's also a sofik whether it was ever chayav or ma'aser. Because esher da'ovet k'di Rav Oshia, the chaver might have acted the way Rav Oshia says that it's possible to do. Da'omar, now, you have like this. In order for produce to be chayav and ma'aser, you need two things. There was gemar malacha. You also need ra'a p'nei habayis, which I learned about this in Brahma Siyah and in other places. You also have to be that it was brought in through the front of the house. Now, once gemar malacha is done, even if it wasn't brought to the front of the house, it's still also midrabbana. And therefore, you're not allowed to eat it achilas keva. You're allowed to still eat a snack from it. But not daraisa. Daraisa, it's not chayav and ma'aser yet.
Because it wasn't brought in
through the front of the house. So therefore, you can have a situation, D'omar, Rav Oshia says, marim odem al shvuah. So a person can play a trick, a person can do a sneaky way around with his shvuah, or machnisa b'moshela. No, not backyard, but rather he brings it into his chotzer, into his front yard, and he brings it into his house, but b'moshela, he brings it in still with the chaff, with the pieces of straw and whatnot mixed into it. So Gemara Malach hasn't taken place yet. It hasn't yet been cleaned. It's not yet ready to be stacked into a pile and smoothed out. He brought it into the house at that point. Kadesh Tehei Behem Tayachelot of Torah Min HaMaiser. That way his animal is still able to eat from it, and it's potter from Maiser at that point. So it will be also Jaraisa, and I mean Jirabonon, for him to eat an Achilas Teva, a full meal from it, even after it's finished, but Midaraisa it won't. Once we have that it's not required in Truma and Maiser Jaraisa, then it's good enough. We can say that the fact that it's only also Jirabonon, a Suffolk is not, the Suffolk, whether he took Truma and Maiser, is not enough to ask for it. The fact that it never became pebble daraisa is good enough for us to say. If we have a topic, whether it's a truma and meiser, that's good enough for our purposes. And therefore, it's not a badai versus a topic. It's a topic versus a topic.
It's a
topic whether it was ever chayav and meiser the daraisa versus a topic. Did he take truma and meiser from it? Okay, you have a few different explanations among Rishonim about exactly what happens over here. So again, Rashi and Tosfos are mentioning this idea that if you bring it in with the moist, then it never becomes chayav daraisa, but it does become chayav d'rabbanan. Tosfos also mentions the same idea. But there are other Rishonim who learn. You have a few different opinions among Rishonim about how it works exactly, and some of them actually say that it may not even be chayav daraisa. It may not even be chayav d'rabbanan, even as long as it was brought in still with the moist, as we're saying over here.
Who says that if it's brought in with the moist, it's d'raisa?
Rashi is saying it's not d'raisa, but it would be d'rabbanan. Nobody says it's d'raisa. That's the Gemara is making that very clear over here. But the question is it chayav d'rabbanan? So in fact, some say yes, some say no. But in fact, when we say over here that an animal can eat from it, some of the Rishonim learn that actually he himself could eat from it also. The only reason we're mentioning the animals is because, practically speaking, if it's got chaff mixed into it, a person is not going to eat from it. But an animal might. But an animal will. But yeah. Chaff is the bits of straw and whatever that are inside it. So eventually, in other words, you take out the straw. But again, at that point, once you do, it becomes chayav d'rabbanan according to Rashi. For people and for animals. But you can't feed your animal pebble either.
So from all the discussion, didn't...
If it's something that's fit for human food, if it's something that's not fit for human food, then you have the famous thing where Esav asked Yitzchak if he has to take ma'aser from straw. But if it's fit for human food, then and you meant it for human food, then yeah, you can't feed it to your animals until ma'aser is taken from it. But here, again, where it's not chayav daraisa, then you're able to.
So what's the conclusion?
So far, well, we haven't finished the discussion yet. We'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. But the point is that so far, what we have is the case of the meister, either it's a vadai versus a vadai that it was chayav versus a vadai that he, being a chover, took truma and meister from it, or a sophic versus a sophic whether it ever became chayav, daraisa, versus a sophic whether he took truma and meister. Therefore, you don't have a vadai versus a sophic, which is what we're dealing over here with in the case of the broken statue, and therefore that doesn't contradict Rabbi Yechanan's statement that a sophic can't override a vadai. What were you going to say? Okay.
So why does Chesed need to call a sophic?
Bechazkas Mesekonen, because no, if
we... You could use it.
Right, well, Bechazkas Mesekonen, again, either it would mean, according to the first explanation, it means completely Bechazkas, and therefore you can eat from it Derech Keva and so forth. According to the second, all it means is you could eat from it Derech Arai.
Tomorrow we're going to see a real Vada.